You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I just want to take a second to say thank you to our incredible sponsors, INLPCenter.org, offering world-class online neurolinguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. I'm honored to be able to receive my certifications from INLP Center and utilize their research and incredible training programs. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And again, thank you to our sponsors. They believe in what we're doing here on Beyond Your Past, and Joanne and I definitely appreciate their continued support of the show. If you'd like to learn more, please check out their websites and see how you can get involved in their programs. So today I'm flying solo again as I continue an ongoing mini-series where I chat with author, artist, poet, and survivor, Veni Kocious. Veni is the author of Cult Child, her story of surviving cult abuse and sexual abuse as a child. On her website, venikocious.com, you'll find information on her artwork, poetry, blog, her social media, and of course the other amazing information and resources that she's created for survivors. I'll be sure and link that information in the show notes, so be sure and check it out. During our chat today, we are taking the discussion of how trauma manifests itself into adulthood to the next step and chatting about dating and relationships. Veni shares more of her personal experiences and research, as well as the struggles and areas of growth she's experienced. We talk about the importance of being kind to ourselves by resisting the urge to self-shame when relationships don't work out, why boundaries are so important but certainly not easy for survivors, and so much more. This is an incredibly important topic, and we hope that you'll find our chat informative, encouraging, and helpful for you as you continue to learn about yourself and heal from your past as a survivor navigating the world of relationships and dating. So let's join this chat with Veni Kocious, starting right now. So hey, everybody, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. Matt here talking with my good friend Veni again in part two of our conversation. I will be sure and link part one, which you actually heard just a few days ago if you're a regular listener to the podcast. And in just in case you missed it, I will link that in the show notes. You can check that out so you can listen to that one and then this one back to back if you want. So Veni, welcome back. It's always great to talk to you. So take a second and just say hello again, and then we'll jump into our chat.
Well, I'm always excited to get to talk to you as well. I mean, you're a friend now. So, my name is Veni Kocious, obviously. And you can find my work at my website, which is VENNIEKOCSIS.com. I grew up in a very abusive, fundamental evangelical cult, and I suffered sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, for most of my childhood. And I wrote a book entitled Cult Child, which very much details in first person being inside of my mind as I experienced these horrible things. And right now I'm working on the sequel entitled Rise of Scylla, which is about what happened to me and how did I adjust to the world post-cult as a teenager. So I'm excited. I'm almost through it. And it's a great book. I mean, there's moments of laughter. I became a very cynical and smart-assy kid. So you get to see those thoughts in my head. And I think a lot of people will really relate to being that compliant child and having to kind of keep all of your true self locked inside your mind. So
The first book was amazing, and everybody can find it, of course, on your website. And so I definitely encourage, if you have not read it, to check it out. Learn about Venny's story as told through somebody who lived all of the things that she's just mentioned right here. And it's, you know, as she said, a first person view, something that I think will really just enlighten you if you're not familiar with it, and really validate you if you are familiar with it. So definitely check it out. And so for this episode, part two, we're going to continue our chat. The last time we talked about the physiology of how childhood trauma affects you and your body and your mind and your health, and kind of more of the physical side of it. Now we're going to jump ahead a little bit into how this manifests into adulthood in terms of relationships and self-esteem and body image issues and all kinds of things. So I am super glad you're back here, Venny. So I'm going to hand the mic to you just like last time, and you can fire away.
I wanted to share with you something that happened with me today. Mm-hmm. And it really let me see, you know what, girl, you've grown. I was on a thread, and it was a very sweet thread about a little boy who ran up to a woman in a ball game, a stranger he didn't know, and just flew into her arms for a hug. And I've had this happen to me with children. Well, they'll just run up to me. And I told a story. I said, wow, this happened to me on a plane ride in January when I was traveling. I had a little boy sitting next to me, and his mom was across the aisle, and she had two other children. And the little boy was about 7, and he's nodding in his seat, right? And his body's slowly sliding towards me. And eventually he just kind of like plops over into my lap. And the mother was just mortified, like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. I said, no, it's okay. I'm asleep. It's fine. I'm reading my book. You know, she can see my hands are on my book. He's snoozing. It's okay. Somebody came behind that and told me I was a pedophile.
Wow, seriously?
Yes. And now, here's where I knew I had grown. The old me would have slammed that person like Rowdy Roddy Piper. I just revealed my age. But I didn't. I was like, this person knows nothing about sexual abuse, because who would ever make like even a joke like that? So I messaged him. Well, first I went to his profile and saw that he literally lives about 20 miles away from me in Renton. And I messaged him and I just said, hey, listen, you know, I grew up being raped and being abused. And I just want to share with you, like, you may have been joking. You may have not had a bad intention for your comment, but it's not something to joke about. It's not a slam. Like, that's not an okay thing to say. And that opened up this conversation of him completely sharing with me about everything that happened to him and his twin, his children. And I think that this is where we as survivors have to not be reactive and realize we're dealing with people who don't understand, or they've been harmed, and so they're very easily triggered. And the way that I responded to this guy actually created a connection and let him share something that he rarely shares with anyone, which would have never happened if I slammed him. So I just wanted to share that because I felt good that that happened. And I think it's important for us survivors who are healing and getting stronger to be patient with people who are lashing out. I mean, obviously don't accept abuse anywhere ever. But try to kind of see people from the wound where they stand and realize that anybody who would joke about child abuse, attack you for child abuse, attack you for sharing your child abuse, has either something wrong with them, obviously, or they just really don't know what they're talking about. And sometimes those can be opportunities to softly react and a teachable moment. It was a teachable moment, a teachable and a sharing moment. So, you know, anyways, so that was a good thing that happened in my day. I felt good that that happened. Sexual abuse dissected me. It really, truly dissected me. And there are so many ways that it dissected me. And I'd love to, you know, kind of break it down into this list and talk about, you know, certain points. One of them definitely, and these manifestations morphed as I, you know, grew older. If you hear my cat, she's outside my door. trying to be part of the conversation. She's a talker. So I think in my teenage years, and what I'm writing about now in Rise of Scylla is really an examination of the times that I said no. But I didn't say no emphatically. One thing that I just wrote about was an incident where I got invited on a double date with my friend, and she said, "Hey, you know, my boyfriend has a friend and he's cool, and do you want to go?" And I was like, "Yeah," but still being a very sensory person, of course, my gut is bubbling. But when you are a survivor, you question that. You go, "Okay, wait a minute. Like, am I just nervous?" You know, you don't like quite know that. Maybe that's your intuition kicking in. So I just like kind of threw it off. It's like, I was nervous. I'm going to have to meet a boy I don't have never known. And what if I don't like him? And, you know, all of it. And I'm stuck with him and all of those things. So we go riding around. We smoke a joint. We end up on a back road by a lake. She goes off with her boyfriend, kind of just walking around the lake. And we're all inebriated, and he starts to make out with me. And I realize in that moment that when I said no, I said it very softly out of fear that if I got, if I said no, stop it, right? Now I might have confrontation on my hand. And in my mind, if I said it with that tone, I'm probably going to get raped. I really truly believed that. Was that the reality of what might happen? Maybe not. Maybe he would have been like, okay, all right, no problem, right? But when you are a sexual abuse survivor, you don't have the ability as a young teen to like reason that. And so you fall silent and compliant and you let things happen. And no does mean no. And it's not no means no, depending on your vocal tone, right? No means no, whether it's said softly, sensually, vehemently, however it's said. I really realized that teenagers need to understand that no means no, period. And that is something that I definitely did not have around me as a teenager. And because of that, I felt compliant. And I really did believe that I was worthless, that I was a whore, like the cult had told me that I was, that the only good that my body served as a woman was to please a man. And that was it. And I just lived in this fear of saying no while linearly thinking that love meant sharing my body. And I couldn't go any further with that. And a lot of teenagers, because of the lack of education, live within this mindset, and it trickles down to teen pregnancies and all of these things that we deal with. But that is the main thing I dealt with as a teenager. And then it began to morph into stronger things in adulthood. I'll kind of pause here in case you want to interject.
When you are a survivor and you are in a situation like that, I mean, yes, of course, no means no, no matter what, no matter what tone it is. Absolutely. Being able to find your voice is huge. It's hugely important, especially if you were never able to, especially if there's a lot of fear involved in situations like that. So let me ask you this before we go on, because the whole relationship thing with survivors is huge. I've had more than my share of struggles with it. The intimacy part of it is huge. There's obviously self-conscious and fear and am I worth saying no? And if I don't say no, what does that mean? And, you know, am I compliant because I really like this person, or am I compliant because I'm afraid? I mean, all kinds of things that go down your head. So have you experienced in your life in terms of relationships or situations like that, where when you are put in that kind of circumstance of wherewith you are with somebody, probably somebody new or newer, you know, that you're just getting to know. And as you mentioned, you find yourself in a situation that is intimate, and you end up dissociating, like right in the middle of it. And you either can't say no, or you're afraid to say no, or you don't know how to say no, because you are triggered in some way. It's quite difficult.
Yeah, no, I have come a long way. I rarely dissociate anymore. It is definitely something that can be actively worked on. And what helped me with that and what changed my dissociative, I think really the most, was building boundaries. It was like when I built boundaries and started to not care about the backlash, these dissociative moments went away, because guess what? I wasn't in fear anymore. But I think, you know, this whole conversation about teenagers and boys need to learn this and that. And I raised two sons. And the way that I educated them was, listen, you know, if someone says no, walk away. And another thing was, don't have sex with someone who is inebriated. They're not in their clear mind. I mean, easier said than done. We're in these situations as teenagers. If we want to really break it down into a very intimate moment, you're there, you're kissing, it feels good, your body's reacting. You've got a whole nother element in an outer circle of high school gossip. And your mind is saying, I really don't want to sleep with this person, and they're kissing you, and you're going, oh, no, no. And you're saying no as they're undoing your shirt, but your body still responds. You see, it's a big ball of mass confusion. And so people are laying responsibility on either side, when really it is an education thing that first, exploring sexuality for a teenager is normal. It's just a normal thing we do. But that's what happens. And then you become frozen. And yes, you do kind of, you do float away and say, you know, screw it. They're going to take what they want anyways, because that's all you've ever known. That's all I ever knew, was that in life, I had to comply, not just sexually, but in any way, rules, you know, I had to do what other people said all my life. I never had my own voice. I never had the power to say no or the right to say no. I'd be punished if I said no. And so when kids grow up like that, moving into that, arena, yes. I had two relationships in high school. The first one's kind of funny. I thought I was the bees knees because he played basketball for another school, and I was dating a basketball player. Okay, so this will tell you how like messed up my head was of what I thought was okay and not okay. We're messing around. I cover his neck with hickeys. I'm 15. He has to go play a basketball game that week. That ended that relationship. But he put hickeys on me, which resulted in me getting just lectured by my mother, who continued that diatribe of, you know, I think I shared before, my mother was so convoluted. On one hand, you didn't talk to boys on the phone. It was okay for me to date him because he was a basketball player and she very much cared how other people thought. But then when I could no longer see him because his mother was like, no, that's not okay. I took the blame for it. I was the whore. I was the slut. So even still, post-Cole, I was experiencing that same environment, that if something happened sexually, it was definitely my fault. It was my responsibility to control myself. And just things like that. No responsibility was put on him at all. In fact, the hickeys he put on my neck, my mother berated me. She was a lecturer, telling me, you know, that is so slutty. How dare you let someone do that to you? So it's that mindset that we live in and day out, day after day after day. Yet I'll share in my book some of the very convoluted things my mother did, like let me date an older married man and loved him and let him into our home. He was preying on me. So when a kid has all of that going on, how can you even begin to define what does a healthy relationship even look like? What does love feel like? I still have never, ever been in a relationship where I've been completely loved, accepted for who I am, outside of friendships. I'm talking romantic love here. Even the two adult relationships I had were abusive, one emotionally, one physically. And after that, I even went through that whole period of, you know, the law of attraction crap where, oh, I attracted them. And no, they hunt you down. Predators know who their prey is. They know how to spot broken people. And I don't think that we should anymore have to carry that whole ideal that a victim has attracted to them, even in adulthood, someone because they're not healed. That's victim blaming. And it's the same thing I grew up in the cult. You know, that same ideal. You didn't pray enough. You're not in God's favor. It's always your fault no matter what. And in adulthood, I had to stop doing that to myself and realize, you know what? I have impairments left on me by very wicked, malicious, criminal people. And I was preyed on by more criminals because I couldn't spot the signs. And that's not my fault. It's not our fault.
That's a hard place to get to realize that it's not your fault. And then to be able mm-hmm. to accept it and use it as a way to empower yourself and move yourself forward. It takes a long time to get there. And sometimes mm-hmm. once you get there, you still kind of struggle going back and forth with it, depending on where you are in life and things that you might continue to work through. And, you know, you mentioned too about being in relationships where you are fully, you know, loved and respected and cared for just as you are without any kind of strings attached or any kind of expectations other mm-hmm. than you just being you. I think too, a difficult thing is for those who have been in this situation, when you do get into a relationship, and let's say it is somebody who is safe and somebody who's healthy, and you are really, you know, you hit it off, things are going well, you're enjoying yourselves, and you're starting to build this relationship and, you know, build the trust and learn about each other and all the things you do. And then something happens where it ends. Not even from, you know, a standpoint of abuse or anything. Maybe it ends because they move away. Maybe it ends because there's just some other issue that comes up that's not anything related mm-hmm. to it, just kind of happens. That mm-hmm. in itself can kind of drive you back into your shell very quickly because you're like, okay, I finally found somebody. You know, I've had years and years of all these abusive relationships and I've done all this hard work and I found this great person. Everything's awesome. And then 6 months later, a year later, years later, however long, it ends for, you know, any number of reasons that marriages end now. And then you're kind of left with, well, I thought I knew what was going on. I thought this was good. I thought I had healthy boundaries. Now maybe I don't. And then you start to question yourself even yeah. more again, which can easily lead back into you struggling. It's very easy to internalize that back on yourself again.
Yeah. And you know, even now, okay, I just turned 50. And I'm still learning the rules and semantics of dating. My friend set me up on a blind date and we were supposed to meet at 4. And I'm a very stickler for time. Like that's one of my major pet peeves is like being late. Of course, totally attached to my childhood where you could never be late. But I also find it a little rude, you know, at least text me and say, hey, sorry, I'm running a little late. So that meant I was going to get in my car, drive across town, and meet this person. I texted them. They didn't text me back. I didn't hear from them until like probably about 4:15. And then they said, oh gosh, you know, I'm at a birthday party. Can we do 5? And I had plans Ouch. Afterwards mm-hmm. to go to see my son and my grandkids. So me, I'm thinking, well, you know, people run late. Blah, blah, blah. I said, sure. And so then I call my friend and I'm like, okay, I feel some kind of way. Like, is this me being overly picky about time? Or she's like, hell no, that's rude as hell. He's known for 3 days he was going to have dinner with you. You can't leave a birthday party. You can't go, hey, I've got an appointment at 4 and leave. She's like, no, that's totally rude. So I followed my instinct and I still didn't get in my car and drive over there. She texts me again. I'm running 20 minutes late. So that means by that time, it would have been 5:30. Dinner would have been over at 7 and I've missed my time with my family that I had planned. So I just ignored him, completely ignored him and went on about my day. And that is a growth for me, because before I would have been so allowable. Sure, no problem. And I talked with my therapist, and she shared something almost really alarming to me. She said, "Do you know, in the past, she had a client who was a narcissist. And one of the things he shared with her was that he would invite a woman to dinner and purposely be at least 20 to 30 minutes late. And if she was willing to wait for him, he knew he had a potential prey on his hands because she didn't have time boundaries. And it just really, you know, let me know that it's okay to have these type boundaries, but it's hard for us because when you don't have a meter to balance it by, I do a lot of this in my head. Okay, am I being over picky? Am I being hypervigilant? Am I being a bitch? You know, am I being entitled? I mean, I will question all of those things when really, no, I'm not. I am enacting a boundary that is basic courtesy that you're going to be on time, sans a wreck or some really crappy traffic, right? Or a death or, you know, something emergency. But I think that's an example of how we really spend a lot of time questioning our own boundaries, even to the point that I kind of had to check myself with a friend, like, can you verify that I'm being sane right now? And she's like, you're totally being sane. And I was like, okay, great. But the question was there. And so even at this age, and I think this is indicative of how long sex abuse follows you in life, I'm still trying to learn that it's okay for me to say no, kick rocks. I don't need to please you, you know, in a way that makes me suffer. And I think that that's what we struggle with and why it makes relationships so difficult, especially if we're with someone who's never been abused. It's very difficult for them to understand. They just look at us like, okay, you're crazy, which, by the way, leads me to kind of a funny story you'll crack up at. I was cleaning myself off of other people's lists on Twitter, and I'm going through all these lists, some of them very inappropriate lists. So I'm like reporting posts and things like that. And I find myself on this list this guy made called Batshit Crazy.
Seriously?
Yes. And then the description says, never forget these people are insane. So I'm laughing to myself, and this will crack you up. I had an emotion about the use of the phrase never forget. So I'm like, wait a minute. That belongs to the 9/11 survivors. That's what that phrase is used for. Never forget that incident. And you're using this with abuse survivors. Anyway, so the word crazy used to be a big trigger word for me. It's not a trigger word for me anymore. It was amusing. But yeah, people do stuff like that too. So.
Amazing growth that I think we can all appreciate is getting to that point of not owning something. Because, I mean, depending on where you are in your healing, that could very easily cause you to spin out. And then, you know, you're down for the count for hours, days, weeks, any kinds of things. And now you're like, so what? Right? Now you're like, screw it. I don't care. Yeah. I've got better things to do, better ways to move, you know, to spend my time. And this person has zero control over me.
Yeah. And I think too, part of it, the more you're attacked, the tougher you get. And the more you heal, the more you realize, like you say, other people's wounds are not your wounds, even if they're projected at you. And so I really encourage survivors online to not get caught up in argument. Block and move on. Like, you have complete control over your social networking. And I will tell you, that is a great tool for trolls. They hate it. They want you to argue with them. They want you to spin out. They want you to obsess for days. Am I crazy? Oh my God, I can't believe I was on that list. No, who cares? It is coming to a point of, like Brene Brown says, you know, about your critics and that, you know, give them a front row. Sure, you can sit right here in the front row and read my story and listen to everything I say, but just know I don't give a damn what you have to say negatively about it. and owning that space. And you get to do that. That's your shield, and nobody gets to take it from us anymore. And, you know, like, there's so many things that I think you do carry. And I think there's a big pressure people put on themselves that they have to, like, that healing means elimination. I just did a podcast with Erica Riva, who does the We and Me podcast about dissociative disorders. And we talked about that, you know, like, integration not meaning elimination. And that's the fear a lot of survivors have, or the pressure they put on themselves, like with hypervigilance. I can get hypervigilant. I probably have a little bit of hypervigilance every day, especially in public. I don't think that's ever going to go away. That's part of my training as a child, right? I was trained in an extremist, survivalist lifestyle. And you just, I think it's akin or linear to having been a police officer or a soldier. There's just, you never see the world the same as you may have before that, right? I wanted to share with you an example of how hypervigilance can attack my mind. I was in a dispensary that I go all the time. I know the guys that work there, they're fantastic guys. Great conversation. We laugh, we crack up, we're always happy to see each other. We'll give each other hugs. Hey, okay. But this day, I'm in there and I'm talking to the guy behind the counter, and there's two guys sitting on a couch, just kind of chilling out. The conversation I do not recall, because I think I did dissociate a little bit. So I don't know. I don't recall like the cusp of the conversation. All I remember is he came around the counter to just personally talk with me. And then the other two guys stood up to come join the conversation because they were kind of in it from the couch, right? And the only girl in the dispensary, my mind slipped. And this is what I thought. I'm about to get raped. I need to get the hell out of here. I could feel the dissociation starting, the hot flash in my body. My heart is rapidly beating, the walls are closing in. Totally not a realistic situation. These guys had zero bad intent against me. This was in my own head. Something about the way that they kind of circled around me, not behind me, but just like in a semicircle in front of me, made me feel trapped. And I said, oh gosh, you know what? I gotta go, you guys, but I'll see you next time. And I got the hell out of there. But that's just an example of what people need to understand. You're looking at our face and we're smiling. Oh, thanks. Have a great day. But in my head, I couldn't get out of that dispensary fast enough. See on a survivor's face is not always what's going on in their mind. And that's what hypervigilance and sex abuse and being raped does to you, is that it takes away your feeling of safety in safe situations.
Hypervigilance is something obviously that many of us struggle with. God knows I do it. And I think what you said was really important, or in that healing is not the absence of triggers or the absence of hypervigilance or the absence of insert whatever you want. It's the awareness and the ability to cope with it and the ability to be okay with your decision. And for you, in the overall scheme of things, there was probably zero to very minimal potential danger in that situation. Mm-hmm. But because of what happened, you were like, you know, something's going on. I need to get out of here. So you did it and you left and you were okay with it. And that is very often where we can end up, like once we are safe, you know, perhaps we are in our car or back at home or wherever we're at.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're like, you know what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you're sitting there and you are reassessing and you're like, my God. Mm-hmm. And so you have to really get to the point, and I think this is where healing is huge, is to not shame yourself because you had to get out of there.
Right.
Regardless of whether the situation was any kind of imminent danger or not, the fact that you felt uncomfortable and you did right by yourself to get out of there shows absolute huge growth. And not shaming yourself, not beating yourself up, not going, oh my God, you know, they weren't doing anything wrong. Now they probably hate me. Now they probably think I'm a jerk or whatever. But in reality, you took care of yourself.
Yes. And that is exactly what I did. Like, they had no clue. In their mind, oh gosh, she's late. All right, see you next time. But as soon as I got in my truck, I just kind of sat there because now I'm safe. And I literally like laughed at myself, like, oh God, Vinny, you know, and I called my girlfriend and I was like, you're not going to believe what I just did, because she gets it, you know, and she's like, oh, bless your heart. You know, you kind of just like, when you get to that point, it's good to be able to kind of laugh at yourself a little bit, not in a mocking way, but to be able to bring a sense of humor to it. Like, it helped the moment pass. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, I gravitated towards so many things. I mean, things that I would consider even deviant behaviors. Like, I was in the BDSM lifestyle for a long time. And I don't knock it. I think everybody has their journey and I don't like to judge. But I can say for myself, I've entered this lifestyle searching. On one side, I needed power and control. And on the other side, I needed to be controlled and happy. You know what I mean? Looking back on that, as I healed, that fell away. I didn't need that anymore. So I think that sexual abuse survivors specifically, you know, we travel through so many and we get judged for it. Like, ew, you're part of that lifestyle. You know, that's abusive. Yeah, actually it is abusive. And I don't think I met one female in that lifestyle who had not been abused as a child sexually. And yes, there's many predators in that lifestyle, but don't judge us for it, because we're still broken and we're still searching. We're still trying to understand ourselves and find ourselves. And I did learn a lot about myself through that. I definitely learned what I didn't want in my life, what I wanted to throw away. So even when you see a survivor in a bad place or in a lifestyle that you're like, that's not too good for you, they don't need to hear. I would not have accepted that at that time. I would have defended what I was doing because I was searching. I was trying to understand. I was trying to understand, how did I take pain as a child? On this other side, I was enjoying some control in some situations that I had. So I think there needs to be some softness and understanding of the different ways that we travel. It's very hard. It's a trickle-down effect. Our children end up being affected, especially those of us who end up in abusive relationships. It's a lot to carry and look at. But for me, I love accountability. I love being honest and open about who I am. There's like nothing anybody can throw at me that I would be like, right? I own it. Because that all brought me to where I am today. I'm very open about being sexually abused. So if somebody dates me, I'm an advocate, right? They're going to have to be ready for that. But for those who live private lives, it's a little bit more difficult. You know, when do I disclose this? How do I tell my partner that, you know, because there's a fear, right? You're dating somebody, you really like them. You don't want to screw it up by going, just want you to know that I have, you know, this and this and this and this. And now you're afraid they're going to run from you. And so a lot of people live in misery and hide, and they do things that they really don't want to do, to be very, very raw. Like an example of that would be that I allowed someone to have anal sex with me. I didn't want to do that. It's not comfortable. No woman wants that, but we do it because we are terrified. If we don't give our partner what they want, they're going to leave us. When the truth is if that someone would leave you because you say no, they shouldn't be in our lives anyways. And that takes a long time to understand. And it also takes an acceptance and a willingness to be alone, even in moments like today, when I had a moment of waking up lonely and moving through that. I'd rather have moments of loneliness than moments of abuse and having someone in my life. So that takes a long time to come to that place to say, no, I'm not doing that. And if you don't like it, oh, well, it's not healthy for me. And I just did not have the ability to do that. And now that I do, you know, I'm alone and that's okay. I'm still working on things, but it's just a little ironic, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. And the whole theme of this podcast and is really just understanding that, yes, it affects so many areas of our adult life. And, you know, mm-hmm. we focus mainly on the relationship one. So I think we'll end up having more of these to go down other roads, just a little FYI for everybody. But it's an ongoing journey of trial and error. I'm learning from this. How can I be better prepared in the future? How can I help myself through this if it happens again? Taking every situation to learn how you react and see the growth of just being able to reassess and not beat your, and not beat yourself up because, you know, you did something that you, you know, maybe wish you wouldn't have. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you haven't healed. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means you had a rough moment. Perhaps you had a moment of weakness. Perhaps you had a moment of fear. It could be any number of things, but it doesn't define you. It's not, you know, this huge setback. It's just something to learn from because there's a lot to consider every day when you're out and about in the world and just everyday life. And when you're in a relationship or you're out on a first date and your little one's sure, and it's this ongoing journey of how can I best protect myself, but yet still be open to having somebody new in my life? What boundaries do I need? Are they safe? What are the red flags? Trying to balance all this stuff can be incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And even knowing, like, I had a conversation with one gentleman who I realized, damn, he's mirroring me, because he was dropping catchphrases like mindfulness and things like that, but yet his behavior wasn't mindful. So watching that too, it is so important that we watch behavior versus words. I don't want to, you know, I like when people tell me that they love me, but I'd rather feel it because I didn't get that a lot in life, except for from my children and my grandchildren, right? I get this unconditional love. But I'm talking about in relationships, I'd rather it be shown to me in very simple ways, like being on time for dinner. And it's getting to that. It's getting to even realize, like, what does make us happy? As I grew my boundaries, that's how I think that right there, boundary setting, is a core that helps you release crap and realize what you love. Because when you get there, when you're like, okay, I don't like this, so I'm going to place a boundary on it. I'm never going to do that again because it hurts and it doesn't make me feel good. Boom, boundary, you have one set. It's all about what makes me happy and what doesn't make me happy. And this whole misconception that people are supposed to sacrifice for their partner, bullshit. No, you don't. You come into each other's lives and you enrich it. You should already be in a place, right, where you are sharing and growing. And that was really important for me to learn too. Like, I took in a lot of fixer-uppers. I was a fixer-upper for a long time. I'm not a fixer-upper anymore. And I do have to say that when those boundaries get tight, the dating pool shrinks immensely.
Yes, it does. And boundaries is one of the biggest keys to anybody's healing. As much as it kind of shrinks the dating pool, it also helps you feel safer because you've just eliminated a whole bunch of potential bad relationships or unsafe people because you enforce the important boundaries that you need to help keep yourself safe.
And instead of feeling like I went through a period where I was like, right, I'm so sick of this. Now I'm like, yeah, no, you're not doing that. So it comes from you move from a place of, God, I'm always having to enact my boundaries to, you know what? I'm about to enact a boundary. It's powerlessness into being self-empowered in that I love the and harm none, do as you will phrase, including yourself. Being with someone who you know right off the bat, like those first red signs, it's okay to walk away. I am quick to just be out of there. Probably why I don't get approached a lot. Like I do not get approached online. People don't flirt with me, things like that. When you build those boundaries and make it very clear where you are, who you are, and what you want to be in life, you know, people will see that you're not going to accept that. And another thing that's helped me is going, you know what? When I think about the end of my life and I'm departing this dimension, what makes me the happiest is to know that I'm going to be surrounded by an amazing family and the most amazing friends I could have ever made. And that feels so much more like attractive than thinking, oh, I'm going to have a partner. We don't need romantic partners to be whole. It's nice to have it. I'm saying, if, you know, my heart is open, obviously, if that comes into my life, I'm totally open to receive it, but I don't need it to be happy. I need my friends. I need people like you, my family, other trauma survivors, support groups. Those people enrich my life. And so it feels full. And I have little moments of like, dang, I'd love to cuddle and watch a movie, but that never overrides this huge support that I have over here. And I wouldn't give it up for the cuddles. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And we could go on for another couple hours because I have so much more to say on this, but I know we are running out of time. But I think
already
the boundaries, oh my God. I know, right?
I love talking.
It always goes so fast, and it is. I'm honored to be included in that circle of safe, supportive people. So thank you. And I also include you in that for me as well. And I mean, being in a relationship, and if you are in one and you love it and you're happy, that's amazing. And if you're not, that's totally cool too. There's nothing wrong with it either way, as long as, you know, you understand exactly what Venny just said. And that's the big key is there's nobody that can fulfill you or make you be who you want to be or who you think you should be or anything else. Loving yourself and enough to put up those boundaries and loving yourself to wait to find the right person and to love yourself just because you're awesome the way you are, single, divorced, whatever. Like that's a great place to be in, because then you can receive the love of somebody and know that I'm okay. I'm awesome. I'm loved just the way I am. Now I have somebody else who wants to reciprocate that in other ways. And that's even better. So it's a bonus. It's not a requirement.
I love that. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. Absolutely. You should always be your happiest self before everything. I think the only thing that I would sacrifice my happiness for would be my grandchildren, because they're little children. Other than that, no. My happiness and my mental health comes first, because I can't be good for anyone if I'm not good for myself.
That's exactly right. You are awesome and amazing just as you are, Venny. And I'm glad you're here on the show. And I'm sure we will do more of these, because we had tons more notes that we didn't even remotely get to yet. So.
I know, right?
Cool. So why don't we wrap this up? You can tell everybody where to find you and your book and all that good stuff online one more time.
Okay. Please read Cult Child, especially if you're not an abuse survivor. You will walk away understanding what a child thinks. I made a point to write it from that perspective. For abuse survivors, I always caution trigger warnings, because it is very deep and very raw. You can find all my books. I have a poetry book. I have a CD. I have a great gratitude journal that's really helpful in healing. And my website, again, I'll spell it because I know my name is different, is VENNIEKOCSIS. And I really, really adore you, Matt, and I always appreciate you having me on your show.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.